You know, we're scouring the planet for awesome guitar players and awesome guitars.
I wish I could tell you I was a ninja too, but that would totally be a lie.
Okay, hey everybody, this is Frank Butler with ShareMyGuitar.com. Welcome to the podcast. This week's featured guitarist on our podcast interview is Gretchen Menn. She happens to be the lead guitarist for Zeppelin, Sticks and Stones, and Lap Dance Armageddon. Hey Gretchen, we're really glad to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we've been excited about hooking up again. So can you tell us how you started with the guitar? We'll just work our way through from there.
Sure, yeah. I started on guitar seriously when I was in college. I had sort of become interested in guitar-oriented music midway through high school, through like Led Zeppelin and Eric Johnson and Steve Morrison, the Dixie Dregs, and Frank Zappa.
Okay.
Led Zeppelin was kind of my segue into guitar-oriented music. But it was my first year of college that I started taking classical guitar lessons.
And so you were just playing acoustic?
I had an electric guitar, and my degree was in music theory, and like I said, I was taking classical guitar lessons with a teacher, and so I would take what I had learned in the classroom and try to apply that to electric guitar, but my school, the place where I went to college, was a small liberal arts school, and they didn't really have a guitar program other than classical guitar, so I kind of thought, well, I sure, you know, I love classical guitar. It wasn't really what I had intended to play.
Sure.
But I figured nothing bad is going to happen to my technique by learning classical.
Right.
And probably a lot of good as well. So I focused on that and then just took what I could apply from that to the electric guitar and did that on my own.
I read somewhere that your dad wrote for, was a Guitar Player?
Yeah, Guitar Player magazine.
And that you really never connected with a guitar until you were 19, right?
Right. Well, I think a lot of it was I was fortunate enough to have just enlightened parents who never tried to steer me in any one direction. You know, my dad always said it was his goal when I was born to help me figure out what it was I loved to do and to help me get the tools to get whatever that was.
Right.
And so it really, I knew, I think vaguely, that my dad worked at a magazine, and I think I knew it had something to do with guitars. But, I mean, I think, at least for me, you know, when I was a kid, it's like jobs were like, fireman, librarian, police officer. You know, it wasn't like, oh yeah, my dad is a writer for a magazine about this. That was just a little too much explanation, and I didn't really think about it. And it wasn't until I became interested in guitar that it was more and more like, wait a minute, does my dad know a thing or two? And so it was more like once I expressed the interest, he definitely was happy to point me in the right direction, but he never steered me in that direction.
Does he play as well?
You know, he's one of those people who's just a total natural, but he's so good at so many things that he's more of a writer. He teaches journalism now at San Francisco State.
Okay.
But he's one of those people who will say he doesn't really play guitar, but then he'll pick it up and play along with the radio, and you'll be like, wow, his ear is phenomenal. He's a great songwriter. But, you know, I just think about what he could have done and what he could be doing if he made it his focus. He's kind of just a natural, creative person.
Okay, so we haven't talked about it yet, but your main band you're in now is Sticks and Stones, correct?
Yeah, well, I guess I've got two. That's my main, my most long-term original project right now. I'm actually in two original projects, the second one being a band called Lap Dance Armageddon. That's with a guy named Jude Gold, who actually is with Guitar Player Magazine. We met because Sticks and Stones did a show with one of his bands, and then through the Guitar Player Magazine connection, we ended up becoming good friends and starting a project together. So I have two original projects, and then I have a tribute band that I play in called Zeppelin, that's an all-female Led Zeppelin tribute band.
Right, and I've seen you on that, on videos doing that for several years, and you're quite famous for that. You know, you're doing all the Jimmy Page stuff, which is awesome, and so that's still going too. So you've got that going, and a spinoff of Zeppelin was House of More, right?
Exactly. Yes. Wow, you've done your homework.
So you did an album with the House of More, and you also play.
We did. Yes.
You've also played on Francis Bacon, correct?
Yes.
See.
Yes, that's correct. That was Clementine's brainchild, and she needed sort of somebody to be the know, her brain fingers on the guitar, so I just kind of came in and operated under her direction, you know. I provided, you know, a few ideas and things here and there, but I really saw myself as her mouthpiece for that.
Did you do the guitar on Bulldog?
Yes.
Yes, I love that song.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, backing up, before Zeparella, you were in AC/DC as Agnes Young, instead of Angus Young, yeah. And so, how long did that last?
The band existed both before and after me, so I was one of a few lineups they've had. I joined AC/DC in about 2002, about 2005, so I was there for about 2.5, about 2.5 years, not quite 3 years.
And before that, you were with Bottom?
Bottom, actually, that was a later thing, and that was that was really only one tour. Clementine, the drummer for Zeparella, who was also the drummer for AC/DC, that's how I met her, she was in Bottom with Mila, who is the bass player for Zeparella, and they were in Bottom tour. I mean, they were Bottom, you know, with one other woman, Tina, for, 10 or 11 years, and when Zeparella started, Tina became the singer, and it ended up just kind of being a natural thing that they were like, well, both bands want a tour, why don't we just, instead of having Gretchen just, you know, have nothing to do when Bottom plays, why don't we have her in the band? So, and I think it was the band was kind of in transition, and they were trying to figure out maybe new ideas, new things to kind of change it up. You know, ultimately, the band didn't end up continuing. But I did play with them for one tour. But that was right at the beginning of Zeparella.
But still, the core group is kind of a revolving band where each person in the band is taking the lead as a solo artist and you're all backing each other up. Is that kind of how it worked?
For which one?
You know, for Zeparella and Bottom and AC/DC and Francis Bacon. I mean, it's the same people, or some of them. You know?
It's very incestuous, isn't it? You know, yeah. Okay, I'm going to chalk this up to the fact that Clementine, who's the common thread here, the drummer,
right,
is a total band slut. I mean, she is just like, she loves music so much, and she is so excited about, you know, she's a drummer. She wants to play in 8 bands. She just wants to play all the time. So I have to blame / credit Clementine for the enormous quantities of bands that I seem to have been in with her. She always gets new ideas for projects, and I'm always game. And so, you know, Zeparella was, you know, okay, so she was already in Bottom, and AC/DC, that's how she and I met. So it was her idea to do Zeparella, and then it was her idea to put me in Bottom, and then it was her idea to do an original band, meaning House of More.
Okay.
And then Francis Bacon was the thing that she came up with. So I think I really can trace it back to Clementine more than anybody.
Well, you know, when I was looking around for interviews, your name came up several times, and one person that was really gung-ho about you was Jane Tiska from Scranton. You know? She couldn't say enough good things about you. So, and Margaret loves you, too. You know,
Jane is great.
I interviewed you know, both of them previously, mm-hmm. and they had mentioned you guys did a gig or a tour, I don't know what it's called, She Riffs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, and they were saying they would like to, you know, take that on tour.
That would be so cool. Yeah. It was difficult to coordinate so many bands, just because I think we had 5 bands on that bill. But it was really cool. And Jane, that was totally, as far as I know, totally her idea. She was the one who made that happen. And Sticks and Stones was just thrilled and fortunate to be able to be on that bill. A lot of really talented people.
I've seen you play Les Paul quite a bit, Zeparella.
Yeah.
But what are your other guitars? Because I see with Sticks and Stones, you're not playing a Les Paul.
Right. Sticks and Stones, since it's my baby band, I get to play whatever guitar I want. You know, if you're going to step up and play Angus Young or Jimmy Page, like, if you're really serious about what you're doing, you're going to pay attention to the kind of instruments that they played, and especially if the band's going for authenticity, your gear is kind of pre-mandated. So for Sticks and Stones, it's my band, so I get to do what I want, and the first guitar I had is still my favorite guitar, and that's a Music Man Silhouette. I am such a huge fan of Music Man guitars.
Oh, yeah.
They're always the guitars that feel like home in my hands, and I will play them forever. They very early on did a good turn for me too, and help me, like, with my first instrument, you know.
Right.
Really set me up and gave me, you know, treated me well. I know the people over there, and they're just fantastic. So, and the guitar is just, it's one of those things that it's a well-made instrument without a lot of frills on it.
Right.
I tend to like not only just the well-made, you know, fit and finish of the instrument, but also the fact that everything's very functional on it.
Sure.
It's just great guitars.
Do you collect any other guitars, or you keep a minimum?
You know, it's so funny. Like, I always think of myself as a total, like, instrument minimalist. But now I'm kind of looking around, and I'm in my living room with, like, five guitars, and that's not even counting the ones that are in the studio. But if you really break it down, it makes sense. So I've got, my first guitar was a Music Man Silhouette.
Right.
My second guitar was a Music Man Silhouette Special, and that was because I started playing shows, and I realized, hey, if I break a string, if something's wrong, I need a backup instrument.
Sure.
So that got me two guitars. Then I started playing an AC/DC. Well, what am I going to play other than an SG? Like, there's no other option. Like,
right.
So then I got an SG. And then I started playing in Zeppelin, so I had to get a Les Paul. That was a no-brainer.
Right.
And then I started playing, we started playing a couple Zeppelin songs that required a Dan Electro.
Okay.
So I got a Dan Electro. Meanwhile, a luthier friend of mine had given me a steel string that somebody had just kind of abandoned.
Okay.
Then I ended up realizing I better have a second Les Paul. You know, Zeppelin's played a couple really cool gigs, you know, like things like opening for Kiss, where you really don't want to break a string and then like switch to a guitar that's not really appropriate.
Right.
So, I mean, just through things like that, I think I don't think I have even 10 guitars, but all of the guitars I have some sort of purpose or explanation, and I play them all. None of them are just, you know, things to have around. Oh, and I have a classical guitar as well.
So, with Sticks and Stones, you've opened for Blue Oyster Cult and Johnny Winters, right?
Yeah, amazing. Such an honor.
Was that up in San Francisco?
Blue Oyster Cult was at Slim's in San Francisco, and Johnny Winter was at the Mystic Theater in Petaluma. This is north of San Francisco, 45 minutes or so.
So of all these gigs with all these bands you've been in, what's your favorite gig of all time that you've had? Or if there is one?
Let's see. I have to think about it, and I don't know if I could narrow it down to one that's kind of like, what's your favorite album? It's kind of like, what aspects of each one? Let me think for a second, otherwise I could give you a couple that just immediately jump out.
Okay.
I have to say, it was really, really cool recently. My brand new project, Lap Dance Armageddon, just got to open for Adrian Belew. And
oh, cool.
He was an early inspiration of mine.
Right.
We played at Slim's, and it was something that happened rather quickly. I had actually approached Slim's for that gig for Sticks and Stones.
Right.
And because of the, you know, I'm sure because of the size of the stage and the amount of, you know, the intricacy of Adrian Belew's gear, it's like, what do you want, an opening band coming up and being like, where am I going to put my gear? and so they were looking for, like, an acoustic act. And if you've heard Sticks and Stones, you know we are not acoustic, and the drummer is not gratuitous. Like,
right.
This is a band. It's not just, you know, it's not about any one person. It's about the trio. And to take one person out would be like amputating a limb. Like, I'm not going to play a gig without Sam.
Right.
And so this friend of mine, Jude Gold, and I have been playing guitar for about a year, just more like jamming and kind of trading ideas. And we've been talking about having a band for a really long time, and this was kind of the inspiration that really fired us up to solidify a set and to do some things like that. But if you've ever been to an Adrian Belew show, you know that pretty much everybody in the audience is not only a guitar player, but a really good guitar player.
Yeah.
So opening for Adrian Belew is kind of intimidating. And we didn't have as much preparation time as I would have liked. And it was, we had played one show before, but it was a new project. And so I was as nervous as I've been in a long time, to say the least. And the show went over so well that I couldn't believe how well it went and how relieved I was, and then also how fortunate I felt to have, you know, kind of done something that was nerve-wracking and certainly a challenge, and have it come off well. And it was really, really inspiring. And moreover, just to be able to share a stage with somebody who inspired you when you were 15 is just...
Sure.
Just an incredible, incredible rush. I mean, anytime you're gratifying your inner adolescent, you got to kind of pat yourself on the back to be like, you know what? When I was 15, if I knew what I was going to be doing now, I would think I was awesome. So.
Right. You know, just a weird little Adrian Belew story. About a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, I won tickets to Adrian Belew, you know, from a venue, you know, on the internet, you know. And it was the next night.
Yeah.
It was only one night notice. You know, it was the next night. I couldn't go. And I started calling guitarists that I knew who I thought would want to go. Like you said, a bunch of guitarists are all in the audience, you know. And everybody I called had plans, couldn't get out of it. No one could go. The tickets just sat there, you know. I gave up. You know? After like eight calls, I'm just like, oh, forget it, you know. So...
Oh, gosh, what a bummer.
He was in town.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see him.
It was a great show.
Yeah.
His newer, as in the last few years, lineup with the brother and sister on bass and drums. They're very young. They're like 23 and 24. So unbelievably cool. You know, I am a Frank Zappa fan. I'm a big Dixie Drags fan. You know,
right.
I definitely like music that some people think is, you know, pretty composed, you know, or maybe a little bit on the geeky side. And every time I see Adrian Belew, I'm always blown away by how, on one hand, intricate and composed and kind of out there it is, and yet also how accessible it is. And that's one of the big challenges playing instrumental music, is to have that delicate balance of interest with accessibility. You know, to make things comprehensible to people who've never heard you before, is always a challenge, and yet to make things withstand the test of time so that it holds up to multiple listening, it's a very, very delicate balance.
Well, you know, when I was doing my homework on you, I was surfing the net, trying to track down all of your past gigs and bands and everything, and I came across an interesting site that was called Lasagna Palooza. And I thought, what kind of a...
I don't even know about that.
And I'm like,
what
kind of a gig is that, right? So I go on the site, mm-hmm. and it's about vegans, you know. You know, I came across that, but at first I thought, Palooza, you know, I thought it was like, oh, some kind of a festival, you know. I thought,
yeah.
Oh, Lasagna Palooza,
yeah,
okay, must
yeah.
be some kind of Northern California freaky festival, you know. But it was you eating lasagna.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I am a vegan, and it's so interesting. There was I was actually featured in Veg News.
Right.
I guess it's a pretty small group of vegan musicians, and so I was surprised that anybody even found out. In fact, I couldn't figure out why anybody even knew, and I realized, I don't know, maybe if somebody was trying to find vegan musicians, you call a club and ask which people have vegan stuff on their rider. But I don't know how it got out there, but a couple of things actually have come up in terms of like a couple articles and a documentary that I don't know if I'm going to make the cut in.
Right.
Because I was one, a musician, and two, a vegan.
Well, and three, we haven't talked about this yet, a pilot, right?
You really have done your research. Yes, I am a pilot.
And I understand you're an instructor because, and you know, my connection to that was my father was a pilot for 50 years and he was an instructor. And, you
really?
Know, had multi-engine and seaplane and helicopter and, you know, all that stuff. And mm-hmm. His goal was to fly everything, you know, his entire life and die of old age. And that's exactly what he did. You know, he flew for like, I don't know, 55 years or something crazy like that. But I was just impressed, you know, you flew for like Continental... Were you doing turboprops, or what were you doing with them?
I actually skipped turboprops altogether, and I got hired straight into the jet, which I should mention, it happened so fast that it was just because I got in at a really good time and because I happened to have kind of high multi-engine time. It definitely took me off guard when I was sitting there, like, having flight instructed for a year. Sent out my resume just because normally the amount of time that it takes, at least from what I saw with my coworkers, is you get a few thousand hours, you send out resumes, you update your resume every 6 months when you get more hours, and maybe after a couple of years of doing that, you might get a call for an interview, and then after doing a few interviews, you might get hired for a class date that might be sometimes as much as a year in the future. And so from my perspective, you know, from when you first send out your resume to the time you actually might get hired from an airline is a minimum of a couple years, maybe more.
Right.
And it just so happened that because of the way the airlines were hiring at that time, I sent out my resume, and I got a call 4 days later for an interview the following week, and then they hired me on the spot to fly a jet starting the next month. So I was like, so much for, I mean, it's like, did you ever see, like, or did you ever hear the comedian Mitch Hedberg talking about, like, potatoes and how they take so long to cook that sometimes he just puts one, even if he doesn't want one, in the oven, because when it's done, who knows?
He might
like
one later.
The airlines is like, I'm like, hey, maybe I'll want to fly for the airlines, like, in the next couple decades. I'll just send out a resume. So it threw me for a loop so much that I kind of went, okay, I'll fly your jets or whatever. Okay.
Yeah, because when I read that you didn't really stick with it that long because you wanted to pursue your music career,
mm-mm.
I just assumed you were into turboprops and hadn't gotten to jets yet, so that's really cool you went straight to jets. You know?
Yeah, it was, except for I have a theory, which is there are nice planes and there are fun planes, and the planes that are really nice, they're all slick and trick and glass cockpited and really fly themselves, and while it means that you go into the plane and you go, ooh, because it looks all new and pretty, it doesn't require much hand flying skills.
Right.
And for somebody, it's like when you put in the time, and if you enjoy flying, you enjoy flying. It's like, it would be like as gratifying as a drummer sitting behind a drum machine.
Right.
It's like, well, don't you kind of need me to do anything? And the thing with turboprops, from what I understand, is they definitely have... they require a little bit more stick and rudder skills.
Right, you know, well, hands-on.
A little bit more like, yeah, exactly. And I like the hands-on flying. If it had been up to me, and if I hadn't gotten myself so deeply in debt from all the flight school and everything, I would have gone back to doing aerobatic stuff, which was initially what I wanted to do to begin with.
Right. Yeah, you know, my dad was a test pilot and flew experimental stuff for the Air Force, and then... you know, later on in life, he was flying cargo planes and stuff because he was an old man, you know. And he said he was just like,
right.
He was a flying bus driver. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, a glorified bus driver. But for other people, it's their dream. And, you know, and when I was sitting there behind the controls of this nice, new, beautiful jet, and I was bored out of my mind thinking, like, that I was wasting time that I could be spending playing guitar. And I thought, you know what? I'm sitting here holding this seat. There are only so many airline jobs.
Right.
And this is somebody's dream job. I was flying with captains who had never read a book. They'd never done anything other than think about airplanes their whole life. And I'm thinking, those are the people who should be doing this, not somebody who's like, hey, this is a cool plan B if music doesn't work out. I thought, why am I investing so much energy in my plan B without having really given my plan A a fair shot? So I thought, you know, I'm going to vacate the seat, give it to somebody whose dream job this is, hopefully, and try the more direct approach to something that I know that I want to do.
Did you ever bring your guitar on board?
All the time.
Did you?
And in fact, it was one of those things, I traveled with it because you got... you know,
layovers,
you get to a destination, and then you're sitting alone in a hotel room. Yeah, well, I mean, usually at least for me, at the stage I was, it gets better the longer you're at the airlines, as you know, but I would go out for either 3 or 4 day trips. So I would fly, you know, a number of legs, like I was based out of Cleveland, and maybe I'd fly back and forth between Cleveland and New York and Baltimore or something like that, and then spend the night in one of those cities at a hotel. Well, you know, you don't really have enough time, or certainly you're not making the kind of money that allows you to just go out and have a night on the town. And moreover, you've got to get up at 4 a.m. to fly the next day. So it was
sober.
Actually a great practice time.
Right.
Yeah, exactly, for sure. It was great practice time. So I did travel with my guitar, and it wasn't really that I was hurting for practice time. It was more that the schedule wasn't ever going to let me play with other people.
Right.
It wasn't going to let me, like, be in a band or book a gig. So, yes, I did travel with my guitar. And in fact, you know what? I had, there was a pivotal moment. I have to say, what almost fueled me in my decision to leave the airlines was I was on a big, long ground delay. And for pilots, you don't get paid unless you're in the plane with the door closed. So I'm sitting there at just as bummed as the traveling public is.
Right.
But I've got my guitar with me, and I was always trying to be kind of conscientious about the fact that the airline industry doesn't like non-standard things. So to have like a 22 or 23 year old girl playing her guitar in uniform, I'm realizing that I'm walking the edge a little bit.
Right.
So I find a corner, and I was just practicing, and I had my classical guitar, so I was doing, I think, some Bach studies or preludes, and I was kind of absorbed, evidently, in what I was doing, because I finished one, and then I heard this applause, and I looked up, and a little, like, actually a rather large circle of people had formed around me, to the point that I kind of went, and then he started applauding. I was a little bit embarrassed, because at that point I really hadn't performed. I was not a comfortable performer. And a guy took me aside, and he was like, you know what, I'm on my way to Texas, I'm doing this recording thing, this delay is basically causing, all of this trouble, and I'm freaking out about it. And then I heard you play, and I thought, it's all going to be okay. And I was like, oh, cool, wow, thank you. And then he stopped and he's like, why aren't you doing that? Why are you flying planes when clearly you should be doing that?
Right.
And I realized I didn't have a good answer at all. I was like, yeah. I mean, that was in the back of my mind, but it's interesting when a stranger kind of just pegs something.
Do you miss flying at all?
Well, I certainly, there's a lot I miss about it. I love music so much that it's hard to take any time away from it to do other things like flying. But, every 2 years, my CFI, my flight instructor certificate, comes up for renewal, and every year I renew it because I don't ever want to lose it. I do love flying. The thing I don't love about it is that there are a lot of hoops that you understandably have to jump through.
Sure.
A lot of just keeping current, which is important for safety, and getting medical exams all the time. It's definitely something that if you're doing it as a hobby, is quite a suck of both time and money.
Right.
And as a career, there's a lot of fun about it, and you're also very much at the mercy of the weather and the availability of planes, and whether people have disposable income to be going up learning something as expensive as flying as a hobby.
Well, we kind of got off of guitars there a little bit.
Well, we did. Don't even start about planes. You can tell I haven't been doing it too much. We can go back to guitars.
No, I was having fun. I was going to tell you, since my dad was a pilot, he always got into the cockpit of whatever plane we were on, commercial plane. With his badge, he used to get me into the cockpit too. Well, one time we were on this French Caravelle, which was like a DC-9 kind of, but a French plane, overseas, and both pilots got up and were back talking to my dad by the door, and I sat down in the captain's seat, and my dad had always told me, don't touch the controls, and it just seemed like, man, they're just sitting here, so I pulled back on the yoke and turned the wheel hard left, and that plane went over. And everybody was eating in the back.
Oh my God.
Everybody was eating in the back, right? Every tray in the plane went on the floor. And
oh my God. How old were you?
Like 10 or 11. So
that is hilarious.
So I flew a jet.
How times have changed.
Yeah. So I flew a jet once.
That is awesome. You probably had more fun than I ever got. I would have been in big trouble if I had done that.
Yeah, it was a multi-engine aerobatic maneuver, So.
Yeah, exactly.
I just haven't had a chance to share them with anybody.
Everybody continue your dinner.
Everybody was bug-eyed when I came out,
Yeah.
Nobody knew what's going on. But.
Maybe relieved as well to be like, well, thank goodness that's not the real pilot. That's hilarious. Those planes are made to withstand a lot more than anybody ever thinks.
I've seen the videos where they bend the wings to almost 90 degrees before they snap. And so when they shake a little bit and there's a thunderstorm, that's nothing.
Yeah, I know. I'm always reassuring with, white knuckled people next to me.
Yeah, most pilots sleep through the worst stuff in the back.
Yeah, exactly. Just driving over a bumpy road.
Well, recently you had those pilots were fell asleep, in the cockpit and overshot their destination. I don't know if you saw the news. One time, I was flying with my dad overseas, and it was in a war zone, and he was flying a cargo plane with another guy, and I was in the jump seat, just kind of like on, you know, a field trip of my dad day, and I was I got down and walked around the plane, and I came back up to the cockpit, and you had to go up a ladder to get up into the cockpit, and get back in my seat, and both of them were sound asleep, you know. So they had the autopilot on.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah,
especially with old geezer pilots, you know. I mean, they just set the autopilot, and when the alarm goes off, they get up, you know.
And that's actually one of the big challenges of flying, especially like airline flying and cargo flying, is, you know, for safety purposes, it's set up to be extremely routine, extremely regimented, and that can be extremely fatiguing because, on one hand, it's very boring. You know, it's like you are, you know, can be just sitting there for hours and hours and hours, straight and level, autopilot's on, and you're just sitting there. And yet, you want to maintain the level of preparedness and awareness to deal with an emergency, you know, all the emergency procedures you're trained for. You want to maintain that level of awareness, and that's pretty hard to do when you're just sitting there staring for, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours at a time.
Well, we've definitely left the guitar world. Let's talk about your...
Get back to guitars.
Let's talk about your effects pedals.
Yes. Okay.
What do you use?
I was one of those guitar players that started using effects much later because, you know, because I started later in life, I had got a few key pieces of advice that I took very, very, very seriously. And it was things like, if you play with a lot of effects, it just covers your mistakes, so you shouldn't ever play with a lot of effects unless you suck and you're just trying to hide your mistakes.
Right.
Okay, well, I after a number of years, I reconsidered something that I had just taken at face value because somebody who I respected, you know, had said it, and thought, you know, go to see somebody like Adrian Belew or whomever, and you realize that effect usage is definitely an art in and of itself.
Right.
But I am nowhere near the level of artistry with effects. I just use a little bit of delay or a little bit of reverb. Like with Sticks and Stones, like maybe a little bit of reverb on, you know, rhythm parts, sort of a bit drier in general, and then the kind of a short, mild delay. And that I use a Lexicon multi-effects processor that I actually find more complex to use than the jet was to fly.
Right.
I mean, like, I actually even called Lexicon, and I was like, do you guys have, like, a version that doesn't require me to have, like, a degree in electrical engineering to be able to, like, understand? And they were like, no, pretty much not.
No.
Dude, okay, then in that case, delay and reverb it is.
Right.
So I haven't even scratched the surface on how much that thing can do. But
right.
It sure sounds great what it does.
Yeah, it does.
And then for Zeffirella, I just have a wah-wah pedal. I recently, actually as of the last two shows, I have an old Phase 90 that was actually one of my dad's pedals that I use in one song. And then I have a boost pedal that I just switch on for the solos, which is kind of a clean boost. And that's an exotic effect pedal. It's a fantastic pedal. It was a gift from a friend of mine, and it's probably my favorite pedal that I have. And then one of those Line 6 delay modelers. It's a big green pedal, and that thing also does a ton. But I don't use a whole lot of effects. I would like to get better at it, but a lot of times I find myself wanting to play as opposed to tweak knobs.
And right.
Then I'll have to invest more time to get, you know, to really dial in some better stuff and kind of improve my chops in the effects arena.
Right. Well, you know, you're known as one of the best progressive metal female guitarists in the country, so you don't have to do a whole lot to improve.
Well, I was going to say that I better get myself together.
Well, you know, it's like you said, you know, your original thought was that, you know, a lot of guitarists, especially younger guys, say, you know, oh, you know, pedals are for hiding your mistakes, but what if you're really, really good and you use pedals, you know? It just gets even better.
Well, the thing is that it's like, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it's easy to be kind of masochistic as it relates to pedals or lack thereof. And I think I've more recently come to the idea that it's like, okay, if something sounds good, that's what we're after.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really matter all that much what went into engineering the sound. If the sound ultimately is pleasing, then who cares how many effects are on it or how many effects aren't on it? So I'm trying to get better about learning them as their own thing.
We haven't talked about Mikhail Tremel. Your other guitarist, because you know you've got this.
Yes.
It's a trio with no bass, no vocals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two guitars. It's,
right.
It's a pretty interesting trio. I mean, it still has a really full sound. You know, how did you hook up with Mikhail?
That was actually a really kind of cool story, at least for me, just because it was, you know, a lot of times you just sort of fall into meeting somebody, but it was actually a very distinct moment. I had just played with Zeffirella at the Red Devil Lounge, and they were at the end of the night where they were kicking people out.
Right.
And, you know, basically, if you aren't with the band, get out of here. And he had come up to me looking for Clementine.
Okay.
I guess Clementine, my drummer, sometimes does studio work. And he was recording sort of his own solo record. And he was going to hire her to do it. And he had come up to me and said, you know, I'm looking for Clementine. She's maybe going to play drums on my album. I'm winding up my cables. And then a couple minutes later, you know, he was standing by the stage. I told him Clem would be out shortly to pack up her drums. And the club came up, or somebody from the club was basically kicking people out and said, okay, you know, either, you know, basically turned to me and said, he's got to get out of here unless he's with you. So sort of in a minute, there's this guy who's a total stranger to me, and I had to decide whether I was going to vouch for him.
Right.
And I got a good feeling from him. I'm like, yeah, he's with me.
Okay.
And so flash forward a week, and Clem's in the studio with this guy who she's saying is amazing guitar player, and I hadn't really put two and two together until I came in to visit them, and I was like, oh, okay, I remember you. And then we started just instantly geeking out on guitar stuff. He was doing this amazing, like, you know, two-handed tapping, Eddie Van Halen, all sorts of crazy, like, guitar gymnastics.
Right.
And he came out, and I was just completely impressed. And then he came out and he started talking about how he just started taking lessons from this guy who was teaching him about music theory, and I was like, how much are you paying for those lessons? And I forget what it was, but essentially I was like, okay, check it out. My degree is in music. Like, unless you're talking about really in-depth, like, 20th century, like, Schoenbergian sort of harmony stuff, I can get you through the first couple years of college, like, on music theory. And so we worked out a trade where we just started getting together and, you know, geeking out. He would show me some of his shred guitar stuff, and I would talk to him about, you know, modes and harmony and stuff like that. And then we started realizing that the best way to apply the stuff is to do it in the context of songs, and instead of just taking it into the cerebral hypothetical world, like actually applying it into something we're doing. So these songs started coming about, and next thing we knew, we had a band. It was a very organic experience.
And did he already have Sam, or did he just come in later? And because you were using Clementine, right?
No, actually. No, okay, the band started with me and Mikhail, and then he found a bass player and a singer.
Okay.
And we were looking for a drummer. And the bass player was a guy named Andrew Profeta, who's actually, I'm still very good friends with him. He plays in a number of bands across, you know, the Bay Area. And then a singer, who was enormously talented, but came into rehearsal right after we had found a drummer, came into rehearsal and said, that unless we gave him full creative authority on all matters, including things like, you know, guitar solos, drum fills, everything, then he was going to quit the band. And we were kind of like, gasped. You can't possibly be serious. Like,
right.
So he was really talented, and, like, you know, we really wanted to work with him, but it was one of those things that it was like, no, we can't agree to that. So basically the singer walks, the bass player essentially is, you know, he was already really busy, and as far as things were looking like, we didn't have a band.
Mm-hmm.
But Mikhail was set to meet with Sam, like, the next day, and he called him and just said, look, you know what, this band that we have, we don't have a band anymore, it's just me and Gretchen. And Sam's like, wait, Gretchen, I know Gretchen, like, he'd play with AC/DC, he'd play with Zeffirella, and so he was kind of like, well, let's just check it out. And we got together, and we started, and Sam's like, show me the song. And I really have to credit Sam with the fact that he was the first one who pointed out, he's like, you know what, you know, after we played for a few weeks together, he's like, you know, we auditioned some singers, we auditioned some bass players, and he was the one who said, we sound pretty good as we are. What if we were just see what we could do, the three of us? He's like, you bring in another person, you're going to bring in their schedule, their issues, you know, all of these things. Sam's been in the business a lot longer than Mikhail and I have. You know, he's been in a lot of bands, he's really seen a lot, and he's kind of a no BS person.
Right.
And so he was the one who encouraged us to do it, the three of us, and the more we played the three of us, the more we realized that there was something that we liked about it. You know, and for me, as a guitar player, I realized how much more conscious I am of bass lines now, you know, because a lot of times we will fill in bass notes as much as we can, like in songs, but
sure.
I approach things almost more like classical guitar. You know, when you're playing like a Bach prelude, you've got a bass line going on, you know, in the lower strings. It's, you know, it's counterpoint kind of thing. And to apply that more to the rock and metal type genre is something that kind of is inadvertently, I think, become a little bit more of our sound or style.
Right.
Almost the absence of the instrument has created something unique.
Yeah, I saw a video of you guys doing Kashmir, you know, and
oh yes,
he was low on the neck and you were high on the neck, you know, and it was a really good combination.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, you know, his bass drum is like 3 feet tall.
He owns a drum shop, so he has all of the drums.
Because I was just like, what is that? You know, I was looking at the video.
Yeah.
You know, like it came from a high school band, you know, marching band drum they put on the floor or something, you know, a giant drum.
Yep.
But that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, his 28-inch kick drum.
Is it 28?
We terrified a few small clubs with that. he's got a number of different ones. He actually does have small drums. He's got, I haven't even seen all of his drum kits. I mean, he is like the epitome of like rock and roll, and he owns a drum shop in San Francisco, and he has every drum kit that he wants to have, pretty much. So, you know, at every show, he's like, ooh, check out, you know, he's like, guess what kit I'm going to use? And I'll see, he's like, this time he's got the blue Lucite kit, and next show he's got this chrome kit, and the next one he's got the maple kit, and it's like all sorts of different drum kits for everything. So he is a slamming drummer. And extremely powerful, and
yeah, I can tell.
Honestly, I don't even know that we have any more sonic space for it. Like at this point, like, what would a bass player do? Just like make us louder? We don't need to be louder.
Right. You have to play between your notes really fast.
Right. Exactly. I mean, like the songs now have been composed to not. I mean, because sometimes people come up and be like, "You should really have a singer." I'm like, "What would they sing?" Like,
right.
Where? Like, I mean, I guess we could write different songs, but it's like, you know, I think if you're writing for your band, you write for the instrumentation, you know? So you can't just add another instrument.
Now, how about your band with Jude Gold? Do you have a singer with that one and a bass player?
No. This is an earlier project, and we're still kind of formulating it. Right now, it's the two of us on acoustic guitars.
Okay.
And we hadn't really envisioned the band to be acoustic. It was something that came about because that's what the show demanded, and the acoustic went over so well that now we're kind of thinking, wow, I guess it's good if we include this as being part of our sound, and at least have this be it. If not the only part of the band, a hefty contingency of it. So, you know, whether we end up maybe doing some shows.
Like a full set of acoustic. Or...
Yeah, yeah, or at least, you know, whether the band is the two of us on acoustic guitars or maybe sometimes the two of us with a drummer and bass player or a singer, we're still figuring that out. But as it is right now, it's the two of us on acoustic guitars, and he is just a phenomenal guitar player.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a... absolutely humbling and incredible experience to get to work with. I mean, he's a world-class musician.
Well, coming from you, that's a pretty big pretty big boost for Jude there.
Well, I mean, and I can say that, you know, as a huge fan, and I consider him a very dear friend. he was the guitar player for the B Times 3 tour. So when Jeff Berlin, Billy Sheehan, and Stu Hamm needed a guitar player, he played with all of them.
Wow.
You know, so he's doing everything from rock to intense fusion, and, you know, he does a lot of stuff. He's one of those guys that, were it not for the fact that he's so overextended, you know, he has so many demands on his time because of how talented he is.
Right.
That if he just would clear off his schedule and just say, I'm just going to record my solo stuff, he would be a household name. So it's just a question of whether he wants to have to clear off all of his other fun things and obligations. He's director of GIT now in Hollywood.
Wow. Yeah, I guess he's got a full plate then.
Indeed he does. So pinning him down. Actually, I was just rehearsing with him. So pinning him down for rehearsal is always one of those things I've got to jump on it if we're going to do it.
Sounds good. Well, listen, it's been a great interview. I think we covered a lot of stuff that no one else talked about before. So
veganism and flying jets.
Right. So I got a killer, female shredding guitarist, vegan jet pilot. So
I wish I could tell you I was a ninja too, but that would totally be a lie.
Right. Well, we can edit that part out where you said it was a lie. We'll just have you sing with your voice that you're a ninja, you know. So, okay, we got a vegan ninja guitarist.
Right, yeah.
You know, I really enjoyed the interview, and you know, I knew it would be a good one.
Well, thank you so much.
You're such a killer guitarist. I just thought, you know, how can this not go good, you know?
Well, thank you so much. I'm honored to be part of it.
All right, folks. So this is Frank Butler with ShareOnMyGuitar.com. We've just had Gretchen Mann on the show. She's our featured artist this week. We're really glad she was with us. Gretchen, please keep in contact with us and let us know what you're doing in the future, and maybe we can speak again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome. And everybody, we're going to take you out with Gretchen Mann on her song Turn the Page from her band Sticks and Stones.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. Such a pleasure to talk to you, and very happy to be part of this.
If you have any questions about this podcast or a previous podcast or guitars in general, you can call the Share My Guitar listener line at area code 562-296-2411.